Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Your Radio Liberties, a current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Radio Liberties media manager for Southern Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. So we all have seen masked people walking in major cities in China, also cloud-like layers of smoke on the top of major Indian cities. All are the signs of a growing impact of air pollution. Now it looks like Central Asia has faced the same deadly challenge and it is quickly expanding. As per the recent studies, some Central Asian cities top the list of most polluted cities in the world. And earlier studies have shown us that air pollution to be one of the major causes of heart disease and death in Kazakhstan. So on today's Majlis podcast, we are here to examine how bad is the problem. What are some of the main causes? What can be done about it? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Michael Broody, Professor of Environmental Science at the American University in Washington, D.C., Dr. Jeanbek Kulenbekov, Associate Professor and Chair of the Applied Geology Department at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Maria Kukasnikova, Head of the Move Green, an environmental NGO, who is also joining us from Bishkek, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kish Lok Owazi is with us from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So let's start with you, Dr. Kulenbekov. When you read reports suggesting Bishkek being second to New Delhi on the list of most polluted cities, what goes through your mind?
Actually, about this information I was reading during last year, many organizations, NGOs, and government organizations started to monitor. It was actually monitored before, but especially last year, it was like peak of the monitoring. And also telling about the situation with air quality in Bishkek because of this smoke on the air in Bishkek city. I think, in my opinion, most is problem caused because of a growing quantity of cars, and also around the Bishkek in the suburbs there are a lot of new construction private houses, and this is actually main cause because private houses mostly use coal for heat houses.
Right. Dr. Kulenbekov, let's talk about the the causes a little bit later. I wanted to take the kind of impression from other panelists. So, Maria, you are an activist. You have a different perspective into the issue. So share with us some of your talking points from your meetings when you speak about the impact of air pollution, when you try to explain the impact of bad air quality to the people, to the authorities. What are some of the talking points you use?
So actually, our NGO started this citizen air quality monitoring in Bishkek in 2017, and we were also concerned what kind of air we breathe every day. And especially in the heating seasons, it always went high. And the situation actually now is disgusting and awful. And also this year it's a third heating season, and we see how negotiations about causes and bad health impact now are raised even in parliament. So it's a good thing because health ministry now they provided us and the general public with data about the diseases caused by bad air quality as well.
No, this,
so
this,
it's raising.
Maria, these discussions are kind of a positive aspect. We are going to come back to that. But before that, so talking about the impact, the visible, touchable impact of this air pollution in Bishkek, what are they?
So actually, it's a health impact, especially children are suffering. It's asthma, it's heart diseases, and elderly people also negatively influenced by air pollution, and cyclists as well. And everybody can feel it now, can feel that something is wrong and it's not healthy anymore, and we're not safe anymore, especially during the heating seasons, like 5 months a year. Like according to our analysis of the data that we have now, we can say it like last season 2018 and 19 we have never had safe limits of particulate matter 2.5 that we measure.
This is about Bishkek, Dr. Broody. So I read the valuable report that you shared with me earlier about the studies that you have conducted in Kazakhstan. So do any of these arguments presented by Maria and Dr. Kulenbekov sounds relatable when you look into this from Kazakhstan?
Well, the general answer is yes. Any city that has many, many homes that are not part of the what we call the utility or the district heating system in former Soviet cities have homes that are burning coal or other low-quality fuels, and we don't know the quality or the poor quality of the heating units, boilers, or the furnaces they use. So this winter heating is a very big problem in many Central Asian cities and still a problem in Eastern Europe. Bishkek, like Almaty, has the additional problem of having all the beautiful mountains surrounding the city, which can often hold in the pollution. And so that is a problem. But there's also this, you know, with the growing prosperity in the Central Asian countries, there are, of course, more and more cars, and people are driving more and more. And then it depends upon the how new the cars are, whether the pollution control systems are left to work properly, or whether these catalytic converters, in Russian they're called katalizatsiya, whether they are disconnected. Then it depends on the quality of the gasoline, the petrol that's used. And in Central Asia, there are different sources for it, and some of it's normal, high quality, and some of it isn't. But this winter heating is definitely a very big problem. And in the long term, it's not just a problem for air quality and health, but it's also part of the problem for greenhouse gas emissions. They're incredibly inefficient.
Very interesting, Dr. Brody. So, person like me who cannot grasp the whole scientific reason behind it, let's talk about this problem in my level. Earlier, my colleague Bruce Panier, whom I'm going to invite to speak about this shortly, has shared with me a picture of Almaty. Apparently, it was taken from the sky where you see nothing about the city except a mountain range behind it. So, please tell us in simple language, what is this? It looks like to me a smoke, but does it have a name? And also, what is this made out of, and does the nature or the type of this element differs from the city to city? Obviously, we are talking about more than one city today.
Well, the single pollutant that we're most talking about today is called particulate matter with a diameter of 2.5 and smaller, because it's these very small inhalable particulates that cause most of the health damages. Some of the visibility issues are also related to some of the other widespread pollutants, ground-level ozone, the nitrous and sulfurous dioxides. But mostly what we're talking about here in terms of the health consequences and then the economic consequences from the health damages, we're mainly talking about what we call PM2.5. in typical English lingo. And I actually woke up January 1st, 2018, in the mountains out above Almaty. I was staying with some friends that New Year, and I looked down on the city, and the only thing I could see was the top of the television tower, the Telebashnya. Nothing else was visible looking down on Almaty. I'm happy to send you that photo if I can find it again.
Yeah, please do. Please do. So, Bruce, about that.
I'd just like to kind of reemphasize what Maria said about the health effects. So the long-term exposure to high levels of particulates is the source of many cardiac, respiratory, and cerebral diseases. And if you were to get on the website of the World Health Organization, I think you would see a number, something like annually around the whole world, something like 4.2 million people are dying prematurely. And this is just death. It's not illness from exposure to outdoor particulate air pollution. And the people who have these horrible heating systems are getting it on the inside also, the household pollution. Yeah.
You know, in your report, you had some really scary numbers there, speaking of its impact in Kazakhstan in terms of the health, the heart diseases. So we are going to explore that a little bit later. Bruce, about the picture I just mentioned of Almaty that you sent me earlier, I assume it was taken from the air, so where you can hardly see the city except the mountain ridge somewhere in the background. So you have been going back and forth to Central Asia, Bruce, since the late 80s. How fast things are changing in terms of this air quality, in terms of the pollution, which is our topic today?
Well, you know, I mean, Almaty always had the reputation of having a lot of smog, and even back in 1992, I can remember being at Medeo above the city, and you couldn't see the city at all. So, you know, I got used to that a little bit, you know. But places like Bishkek, for instance, you used to be able to get up, you know, I'd get up at 8, 9 in the morning or something like that, and walk around the city, and in the morning you could see the mountains around Bishkek, you know, pretty good. By the middle of the day, it was a little bit hazy, you know. But the last time I went, just a few years ago, you know, you couldn't see them at all, you know, and that was September, October. So they hadn't even really started the heating season yet. And you know, I mean, I was just shocked that, you know, it was that bad. You know, Tashkent, of course, got a lot worse. But I think really one of the more appalling aspects of this, you know, one of the more dramatic differences is really in northern Kazakhstan. You know, when you get up to some of those areas around Temirtau and the capital and stuff, it's just amazing how much worse it's gotten. Of course, we did the show on Temirtau a couple of years ago because it snowed and the snow was coming down black.
Yeah.
You know, and you from all the heating plants that were there that are using coal, which is surprising because Kazakhstan, you'd figure with all the, you know, natural gas and oil and everything they got, you know, they're still 2/3 of their energy roughly comes from coal and coal-fired plants. You know, they got the big, you know, Ekibastuz coal mining operation and things like that. But it's just amazing, you know. And as our guests have pointed out, there's a lot more cars. And they've built a lot more of these thermal power plants that are fired with coal. A lot of them have been built by China. The one in Dushanbe, for instance, the one that was modernized in Bishkek, which is causing a big scandal, was also, you know, a coal-fired plant that the Chinese did. And so, you know, while it suits the purposes of the population in these cities, that they do have access to more heating in the winter than they did, and that's certainly true. And the supplies of electricity are a lot more reliable than they were in the past, but the cost has been this pollution of the air.
Dr. Rudy, one thing kind of confuses me in this topic. Bruce just mentioned Atrau and Aktau, which are oil-rich regions where you could make sense of air pollution given the oil-related industrial activity. But how to make sense of Astana, I guess I should call it Nur Sultan now, facing the same problem because it is just 20 years old fresh city with no energy activity surrounding it, and yet they are facing the same challenge.
Problem is Kazakhstan probably has another 500 years of coal that costs virtually nothing to use. And the more coal they use, the more oil and gas they have to export. So there's a lot of incentives not to change over to coal or to... This whole region has so much potential to increase its renewables. But you have to do something to level the costs between the use of renewables and the continuing use of coal. I mean, I don't know how much more what the potential from large hydro plants is for Tajikistan and for Kyrgyzstan, but even with greater potential, without sufficient storage, you still can't use it year-round. And the old Soviet unified power system was allowed maximum hydro production during high flows, and then the fossil fuel republics would send power back to Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan in particular when the flows were low. And in fact, it's absolutely in the interest of Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan to become energy efficient because these are the downstream countries and their agriculture is all dependent upon water coming out of the mountains of Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and Afghanistan. So the long-term incentives are it's necessary to hugely cut their emissions.
So coming back to Kyrgyzstan, feel free, Dr. Kulumbekov or Maria, whoever wants to take this question. So we have spoken about Bishkek, and then how's the situation in other parts of Kyrgyzstan? Like I'm particularly thinking of Osh when I ask this question. How things are there?
Mostly our organization, we assembled and installed our sensors only in Bishkek. But we use also indoor and outdoor sensors that we can, you know, just take with us. That's why when we, last year, we flew to Osh, I think 3 times, we realized that the air quality there is also bad, especially in the autumn, even in September when we went to up to the mountains. We could see the smog, like, covering the city. These pollution sources are different, but it's not that easier. And it's interesting that...
How it is different, the sources?
Because a lot of, like, they have almost all private houses, like one floor, two floor house. Of course, they have also cars, but not that much that we have in Bishkek. and they don't have power plant. But unfortunately, now I don't think I can say that we know exactly how the situation is there, like, because we didn't make any study and I'm not located in Osh. So maybe then others who can know this information can share. But as for other cities as well, for example, Cholpanata in Issyk-Kul region, then it's interesting that there is one station there, and it says that also the air quality in the summer is bad there, but maybe because of the tourist season, and that's why in the summer the air quality is also bad there.
Dr. Kulenbekov's challenge is serious. So how much of awareness is there among people about the seriousness of this issue? Is there any visible precautions that people take to avoid this?
Really? People only see the smoke, huh. And this is only like indicator for them. There is no special, let's say, information for people, Bishkek city citizens, to know exactly maybe some kind of scientific data to find out other indicators, to know what is actually, let's say, a concentration of PM in the air. They don't have this kind of information. Maybe in some institutions they have, or some NGOs have. They are trying to tell about that, but it's not enough. It has to be, you know, regularly to show that what is the concentration of PM 10 or 2.5 in the air. It should be always under the monitoring, and then disseminated to the people. Also, the situation with coal-fired power stations, it was constructed during Soviet time, and it's creating steel in the same volume of coal and other fuels. But the other causes, like quantity of cars each year is increasing, and quantity of private house also increasing, I mean the constructions, and they are using the poor quality of fuels. And this also here is increasing. Right. If you compare it over 10 years.
Right, right.
So 10 years back, the situation was better now.
That's interesting.
Can I step in about the raising awareness and how people react on smoke in Bishkek?
Very briefly, please. Yeah.
So now it's better. And now we can see that the market actually is full of anti-smoke masks, first of all, and air purifiers.
Do you see people wearing those masks? Like, you know, when you look into, like, for example, the cities like Shanghai or Beijing, you see people using those white masks. But do you see similar pictures in Bishkek?
No, I wouldn't say this. Yeah. But really, like, especially cyclists or, like, moms with their children, because they know that the situation is bad and it's not safe for their health in the days of smoke. They wear the masks, and there are a lot of like questions about how to choose the right mask to our Facebook and Instagram pages. I mean, coming all these days, starting from October 2019.
So where is this awareness is coming from?
Well, unfortunately, only from NGOs. But this year, once we had news from the city hall and from the health ministry about the wearing the masks, but not detailed information. It's like one recommendation, one sentence. And because we don't have actual and online data coming from government, that's why now we have a lot of discussions and negotiations about how really the air quality bad is in Bishkek.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
yeah, I would like to take your take on experience from interactions with the authorities about this issue a little bit later. But also, let me also bring Bruce here. Bruce, earlier you mentioned Tashkent, and also Dushanbe is a city that we are mostly missing from this discussion. So Tashkent, especially, according to this latest study that I'm mentioning, where it says in Tashkent, what was that? Air quality was on a dangerous level 80% of the days in 2019. It looks like it is a serious problem throughout the region, and similarly in Dushanbe. Maybe there's a scientific explanation to that. I will get Dr. Brody's point on this later. Yet, Ashgabat seems to be presenting a completely different picture. Unlike any other major Central Asian city, it has no air pollution or air quality related problem, at least according to this report. And yet, it's an energy-rich country, and yes, located next to the mountain ridge. How you explain that?
Well, I mean, even going back to the Soviet era, all the electrical and heating plants are fired by natural gas. So it burns a lot cleaner. And coal is one of the worst things you could use to do energy. But Turkmenistan doesn't really have any coal. They were forced to use natural gas, which was the available resource they have in abundance. And that ended up being fortuitous for them because it has saved them a lot of these problems. There's less people in Turkmenistan, so there's less cars in Turkmenistan. So it's pretty simple explanation for why their air is better than in some of the other countries. And although they do, the neighboring countries.
Dr. Brody, is there any scientific studies which explains this situation?
Well, even in Uzbekistan, there's a lot less coal use. Mm. And a lot of the cars operate on natural gas, not just gasoline. But actually, right now I have open the monitors at two embassies in Central Asia, the one in Bishkek, last 24 hours of PM 2.5, and in Tashkent. And in Tashkent, the air is not great. They have the same winter heating issues as the city has expanded, but it's not as bad as Bishkek. It doesn't get over 100 micrograms per milliliter the way it does several times in Bishkek, but it's not good. But there are a couple things I want to talk about scientifically, and one of which is, at least at the U.S. embassies, those monitors are all reporting live every hour, and every single one of those monitors has been purchased only the PM and ozone, the regulatory quality monitors approved by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. There are other good monitors in the world. I'm not going to say there are not, but these are the ones that are guaranteed to be highest quality. Uh-huh. And they're reporting live every hour. And you can download all of the historical data. So when the time comes to do health damage analysis, all of those data are available. Now, the one thing I don't like about them is because the U.S. embassies have had to be moved out from the center of cities for security reasons, they are never located in the dirtiest parts of the city. So that in Bishkek, if you know where our embassy is, it's not, the air isn't clean there, but it's not, there needs to be a monitor of that quality operating down around the Ash Bazaar.
So what you are saying is, Dr. Brody, that the air quality might be even worse than what it is reported.
Well, the air quality is not the same everywhere in a city with complex topography, like a city like Bishkek. So, my first trip to Bishkek over 2 years ago was to AUCA with Zhinbek, and I was up there on the fourth floor where his office is, looking down at the rest of the city, and I could see how bad it was. And that was the beginning of my interest in air quality studies in Kyrgyzstan and not just Kazakhstan. And I think I spent a week there, it was bad weather, and it wasn't until the last day that I could see the mountains that I'd heard so much about. The other thing I wanted to talk about, because Maria said something interesting about Osh, and it comes to this, once you're determined to manage the air pollution emissions, you have to really have much better data about the sources. And in air pollution studies, we call that source apportionment, but it has to be based on what we call a reasonably good emissions inventory. The reality is, unless you have millions of dollars to take away all those individual heating units and connect everybody to the city, we need to know much more about the types of furnaces they're using and what kind of fuels they're using. And we need some numbers. And the same thing with the emissions from cars.
Right, right.
And then we'd be much more efficient.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Brody. So this is a cause for pollution. So is there anything can be done about it? Let's continue the discussion talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate here that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Michael Brody, Professor of Environmental Science at the American University in Washington, D.C., Dr. Zhinbek Kulenbekov, Associate Professor and Chair of the Applied Geology Department at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Maria Kukasnikova, Head of the Move Green, an environmental NGO, also joining us from Bishkek, and Bruce Panier, editor of Ready for Europe, Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the growing impact of air pollution in Central Asia. So, Maria, earlier I promised to you to talk about some takeaways from your interactions with the authorities. So the problem is obvious. As much as you can see it, they should be able to see it. So when you try to explain to them about the seriousness of this issue, about the impact, what kind of response do you get from the authorities?
Oh my God. So mainly it's ignorance, first of all, and every heating season, it's start the same. And then there is negotiations and discussion in the media, and officials claiming that the air is not that bad. So kind of don't trust to anything not coming from official websites and official data from the governmental bodies. But anyway, as Mr. Brody told, that this year the air visual, U.S. Embassy installed this monitoring station, and they certified it in Kyrgyzstan as well. So, and this is really reliable data, and it really helped us to raise, again, awareness among Bishkek residents and the LPs as well, because of this ranking. And Bishkek was at least five times the first place, bad air. And unfortunately, in 2018, they were signed a complex plan to improve the environmental situation of Bishkek after, when we installed our first sensors. And at that time, the prime minister was very responsive, and immediately he took actions. And the plan was signed, and now it is local environmental protection agency, they implemented this plan. But unfortunately, the situation is not improving, because not only in my opinion, first of all, the measures in the plan are not effective. And it's mostly about, the inspections and not sustainable measures. And we don't see any improvements. And when we tried to talk about this in Parliament, for example, this December, it didn't look like a cooperation with NGOs and governmental bodies. It again, caused just these discussions, negotiations about main source pollutants in Bishkek, etc. And it's not about really, I think, willing to improve air quality in Bishkek now.
Dr. Brody, so you might have your own interactions with the Kazakh authorities about this question. What's your feeling? How serious they take it?
Actually, I haven't done much on the sort of the political side of things. I can tell you, though, that at least within the ministries now it's Nur-Sultan, the scientists there understand that it's serious. I do know that there have been many attempts to adopt more higher amounts of renewable energies in Kazakhstan. And several times they have, the government has taken different approaches to providing the subsidies to renewable energy producers, but they haven't made a lot of progress yet, because my impression, I'm not a political scientist, but my impression is that the government hasn't quite gotten ready to understand that to add more renewables, you're going to start taking away the coal, which is the foundation of so much in Kazakhstan. Now, the last time I was looking at this situation there was already 2 years ago, so I'm probably not the most current thing. And, I'm a U.S. citizen, and I tend to try to stay, as a scientist, always willing to help. And rather than getting directly involved, because I'm not a citizen of any of the countries of Central Asia. And so I try to be careful about that. But I always try to provide as much good information and how you can get better. And at our roundtable in, I think it was the last day of April 2018 in Bishkek, we had four members of the Duma, the Majlis, or I can't say it properly. And we had a lot of journalists, and Move Green was there, a number of NGOs. So people understand this. Now, what it takes to do things, I think as we get more and more of these monitoring data, there are good models now that can quantify the health damages. And now there's a lot of economists who are quantifying the economic damages from these health damages.
Let me bring Dr. Kulenbeck of you here. I mean, is there anything they can do? If there is, like, let's say, five things that authorities can do to change the situation, what are they?
I think it would be great to help the people. There are some ideas and suggestions like decrease the limit cost of electricity and also gas. Then people will use electricity and gas. Hmm. Otherwise, they will continue to use the poor quality of fuels and coal. This would be great to betterment the situation with the air quality in Bishkek. Renewable energy, great to use in Bishkek also by constructing companies when they are building the houses, you know, multi-store houses, and this would be another better solutions.
Okay, okay. So, Bruce, why they are not doing this?
Well, there's a lot of things going on here. You know, one, they have existing power plants, right? It's not cheap to build a new power plant. You know, there's of renewables, hydro is the only one so far that really can generate the kind of power that you want, you know, on the same level as like a thermal power plant can, you know, even gas-fired power plants or things like that. You know, solar is great, but you need a big area for it, and you got to have the sun. And of course, Central Asia has a lot of sun, but they haven't developed batteries that store this power for a very long time now, too. So it's great, but like I said, you have to have panels stretching out all over the place. You'll have days where you have a lot of sun, but you're not using all the power, but you can't store the extra power that you've missed, that you don't use excess for very long. So there's that problem. And wind farms are the same thing. You know, to build the kind of wind farm that is going to produce the same kind of power that you're going to get from a coal-fired thermal power plant, you know, it would have to be massive. So what solutions can they do then? You know, first of all, I suppose you got to have emissions tests on cars, and you really got to bear down on them, and you got to make sure that the police are pulling people over and, you know, checking to find out if their catalytic converters and things are working and they're to the maximum, so they're not putting all kinds of pollution into the air. You know, for major urban areas, this is going to be a problem because it's going to take a transition to something else. Now you can get some renewable energy goes into the grid. That's, I'm talking non-hydro, so solar, wind, things like that goes into the main grid. But like I said, it's minimal amounts of energy at this point. Obviously, I'm a village boy out there. That's where I spent most of my time, was in villages. And I think this is one place certainly where they can get rid of a lot of coal use right away, especially in Kyrgyzstan. I've seen people that were able to get all the electricity they needed for their house, household by having a windmill, very small windmill outside. Or if there's a canal, I've seen someone in southern Kyrgyzstan who had a paddle wheel, and he was producing all the electricity he needed for his household by that. These are very small solutions, and they're off the grid, which is perfect for a lot of these places.
They are good, Bruce, what you are saying. When, do they, people or the country or the authorities, do they have resources to make this transition? Obviously, something has to be done, but do they have resources?
You know, it's a lot of money. I mean, you know, I mentioned earlier that the Chinese are the ones that are building all these power plants. Now, if they had the money to do it, they would build it themselves. You know, so there's that. And like I said, you just... renewable energy resources still need a little bit more development. Again, you know, hydro is the only one that could replace traditional power plants, the fuels that they run on. So you need to get more development with solar. You need the super batteries that people have been talking about for years, so that you store excess energy in the batteries for use when you need it. But like I said, the way solar is, and wind too, is the same way. You know, you almost have to use it immediately as it's produced. Sure. So they need to bridge that gap, you know. So this is not something the Central Asians are going to be able to accomplish on their own. And in fact, a lot of the renewables, solar and wind, are funded by outside financial organizations, you know, the Asian Development Bank, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, places like that, organizations like that. So, you know, on their own, they're going to need help. And, you know, as Dr. Brody said at the start, the unfortunate part about this is almost everyone has coal. Uh-huh. It's the easiest way to make up for, you know, power shortages or lack of resources. Uh-huh. Just mine coal. Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan have increased coal production in the last 10 years two or three times of what it was 10 years ago. So,
Yeah, unfortunately, we also need to wrap up the discussion right here. We are way out of time, but the very final point, let's take Dr. Brody, your point on that. You know, they have to do something about this. It's a growing problem. And also, of course, they need resources to do that. Before that, even they need a political will to make this transition. Okay, what is the cost of not going through this transition? Is there any tipping point in this situation? I mean, what I'm saying is, like, in terms of the long-term or short-term implications of not doing what needs to be done today.
Well, I don't think with air quality there's a single tipping point. But I think if you look at sort of the long-term developmental trajectories of successful countries, they all become much cleaner. And there are definitely reasons to think that environment is one of those factors for higher level of development around the world. And, you know, countries with economies that aren't as good, young people are often trying to emigrate in this global economy.
Right.
And I think we need to think more broadly. The health effects reduce productivity of workers. People, kids miss school. They don't learn as much. Workers have to take more time off. But it's also one of the factors that it doesn't help keep your young people in your country when they can see the air and they're sophisticated enough to read the kinds of things that Maria is helping them find. So it's one of those requirements to be part of the modern human capital-based economy. And I should go back to one thing that I said earlier, and that when I gave the talk at the roundtable in 2018, I showed this picture of Los Angeles back in what I would call the old days in the U.S., back in the 60s and 70s, and you couldn't see anything. And I showed the same picture after the years of the Clean Air Act implementation in this country had finally made huge progress, and the difference was remarkable. And, you know, when the U.S. began its process to clean the air and Western Europe partially joined us back then, there was no technology. It was just on the drawing boards, as we would say. Now it's all there. Now it's just a matter of understanding your problems, your sources, in enough detail to find the most efficient ways to go there. We know you can install cleaner furnaces. We know you can improve the quality of the fuel. For big coal-fired plants, there are cheaper things you can do to reduce the particulate emissions. But in the long term, you need to begin this process of the transition to natural gas and more electricity and the decrease in the use of coal. You really have no choice in the long term.
Uh-huh. Okay, terrific. With this, unfortunately, we have to end the discussion here. Thank you very much, Maria Kukasnikova, head of the Move Green, an environmental NGO based in Bishkek. Also, big thanks goes to Dr. Zhinbek Kulenbekov, Associate Professor and Chair of the Applied Geology Department at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Dr. Michael Brody, Professor of Environmental Science at the American University in Washington, D.C., and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blok, Kishlok, Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager for Southern Central Asia. Please join us next week. Until then, bye-bye.